Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hello, Dr. Ray. I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
Thank you for empowering me.
Here's what I think is going on.
I think you're a hoot and a half.
My idea, my theory, my guidance is a bit of a stretch.
I just love your show.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No.
You are really smart.
I am sensitive and understanding and nurturing.
Your show to me is like a comedy information show.
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
I'm all tangled up in my microphone cord. Can't figure out how to get out of it. Hear that? Hear me banging it? Good to have you with me. Thank you for joining me here. Doctor Is In This E-Person Monday. I got the stack in front of me. I stopped doing the phone thing. It's just a lot cooler to look at the stack. And like you can hear it. Yeah, there it is. If you do wish to email, and we get a lot through the TV show, where we invite folks to email, e-person, just go to drray.com, drray.com. There is a contact page there, and most of the time people either with speaking engagements or questions or comments, contact me. And I do my very, very, very best to answer all. So, and I don't mean answer them in the sense of providing a long-winded response. Some type of answer, whether it's called a show, whether it's here's a place to find a Catholic counselor in your area, or good for you, or something. But all right, we shall get to that. Apparently, did you hear this? I didn't know this. Starbucks, yeah, they're selling beer and wine. We're planning on it anyway. Apparently, it's getting difficult to sell sober people a cup of coffee that cost $12. That's all I know. I went to Starbucks. I said, gee, you guys still have coffee? Still have black coffee here? They looked at me like, what? I think we'll check. Maybe we'll have to brew it or something. All righty. How do you get down to the nitty-gritty of somebody's deep personality? We all know what we see. We all make judgments on the basis of how they talk or act, show you their emotions. But what if you really just, you wanted to burrow down into the psyche and find out what makes them tick? And maybe they don't even know what makes them tick. Well, that was the philosophy behind a certain type of personality testing that became very, very popular decades ago. It's not quite so popular now, but I know I was trained on it heavily my first or second year of grad school, which kind of shows you was that back in the 40s. It was called projective testing. Now, it means what it says. The theory behind projective testing is that if you give someone a vague input of a picture, an ink blot, and they have to interpret that. You ask them, please tell me a story about this picture, or what does this ink blot look like to you? They will project their innermost psychic conflicts, feelings, struggles, emotions, onto that story, onto that ink blot. Now, that's the theory behind it, and it was based a lot in psychoanalysis. Psychoanalysis says that we have a lot of deep conflicts that we're unaware of. We got to bring them to the surface, and we got to work them through. We usually do that through psychoanalysis, which was a very older form of therapy. It's still around, but it certainly is not a mainstream form of therapy anymore. So, for example, and I was, quote, if you want to use the word trained, I guess you can. I'd rather use the word taught. I was taught by a PhD, one of my profs, who believed that however somebody responded to an ink blot, you could analyze up one side and down the other. For example, if somebody said, well, that ink blot looks like a butterfly to me, a butterfly that is spreading its wings and ready to move, he would interpret that as, well, this person could be very anxious about being in this testing situation, and they would like to leave. They would like to leave this situation. That's what they're telling you indirectly through their response to this ink blot that they see as a butterfly. Now, somebody else might look at that ink blot and say, ooh, that is a monster. It's a monster with huge, huge feet. He's ugly, and he's big, and he's threatening, and he's evil. So then the interpretation would be, I am threatened, intimidated, perhaps by the examiner, perhaps by the situation, or I have anxieties, and the big feet represent that I could be crushed, flat out crushed. I am not confident in myself, and therefore, I would be easily ruined, decimated. Now that's what he taught us to do. And I remember very vividly sitting in class as he went through how you do this. So me being me, I kind of looked up some perspectives on this kind of interpretation of these ink blots. And one of the perspectives was called illusory correlation. Now that's a fancy, fancy word. But what it means is, you think, you draw conclusions like my professor did on the basis of what somebody says, but it may have absolutely no relation to what they're actually responding to. So they may have no desire to flee the situation if they see a butterfly, but you correlate their response to that, but it's illusory. In other words, it's not real. It's not going to happen. That's not what they're thinking. Now, is there any value to these projective tests? In the sense that if someone would look at them and give you material to pursue, to explain, give you an example. Someone sees an ink blot, and there are certain commonalities that people see. I mean, they've written books on this, where the most common response to this ink blot is this. And then the second most common response is this. If someone sees an ink blot and gives you a response that is so far removed from what you could look at that ink blot, for example, let's say it looks like a butterfly, and somebody says, looks like a cloud in the shape of a tank. And the tank is turning to fire. Now, that's a very loose response, okay? That's you'd have to look at that and think, how did they get that out of that? I mean, I can't even, as far as the stretch of my imagination, I can't see how they got that out of that. One of the things that could indicate is a person that has a very fragile connection with reality. And you could explore that. You could ask more questions about this person's makeup. And in fact, are they just barely hanging on to reality? And are they in a pre-psychotic kind of state? Now, that's one of the advantages of these projective tests. I haven't given a projective test, and I can't remember how long. Because by and large, you get a lot more information out of a straightforward interview, a lot more information out of social history, a lot more information out of, if possible and appropriate, talking to people in that person's family circle or social circle. The projective tests at one time were supposed to be magic keys to unlock the secrets of the psyche. And by and large, there are a lot of psychologists still use them. They still do. The question always is, how close to accurate are they? So if a person draws a conclusion on the basis of somebody's response to an ink blot and says, The person is struggling with a lot of social anxiety. There is feelings of insecurity in unfamiliar situations, and as a result, they tend to retreat from those situations, and they in fact are quite uncomfortable. Now, that may or may not be true, but linking it to what they said they saw in the ink blot, that's a fragile connection, if any. So, just a little primer on projective tests, which, interestingly enough, there are tests called semi-projectives. In some respects, I do that with your email. I don't just read what you say and then respond with some ideas. I try to read between the lines of what you say. What are you really asking? What are you struggling with? If that's possible. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's very straightforward. You know, my kid smacked his brother in the head. Got caught doing it on the playground. The principal says this. I don't agree with this. Okay, that's pretty straightforward. But a lot of times these are interpersonal situations. I got some of those coming up today. Where, as I've said before, I pick out these e-persons sometimes weeks ago. I read them and I put them in a stack, but I don't remember the latter part of the email as I'm reading it. I don't remember it. So sometimes it, for me, it's an educated guess as to what the person is going to ultimately say in the email. But I enjoy doing that. So, all right. Time for me to take a break and then sort through this stack here. I'm Dr. Ray, e-person Monday.
Don't touch that dial. Dr. Ray will be back.
Hey, I'm going to be that unusual caller for you, calling in to pour praise upon you.
The doctor will be with you in just a moment.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at solidarityhealthshare.org or at 844-313-4999.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I want to welcome you, if you're not familiar, with the wonderful world of the gifts of the Holy Spirit. What will America become if it makes it impossible for the Holy Spirit to work here because of untruth and self-indulgence and paganism? This is not just a nice discussion of the gifts of the Holy Spirit, because I'm going to discuss what happens when people make it impossible to be prudent, just, or honest, or brave, or courageous, or reverent. When people make that impossible, what a terrible thing they do not only to themselves, but to our society.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
I've learned some things that they don't teach you in psych school. It's things I've learned kind of by serendipitous happenstance. I have found that if in the morning when you're getting dressed, if you tuck one part of your pant legs into your sock, pretty much all day long, people expect less of you. Now, I've got that right now, but you can't tell because this is radio. But I do that on the TV show. They really don't expect me to be all that erudite or entertaining because the camera looks down and there's that pant leg tucked in my sock. And, of course, the floor director comes to me and says, "Right, you got your pant leg tucked in your sock." And I'll just nod and say, "Yeah, I know. I know. I want it there." All right, this is somewhat lengthy. It's longer than I usually do, but I think there's a lot to comment here. I'm trying to work through some feelings regarding my husband's relationship with my mom. There was an incident when our second was born about 7 months ago between them. We had asked my mom to babysit our two-year-old while we were in the hospital. In fact, I didn't want to inconvenience my mom, who also babysits my niece, but my husband insisted that I make sure, and she puts "make sure" in quotes, my mom could help. However, when we left that morning for the hospital, our toddler woke up and began to cry about us leaving. I'd already left for the car, so I didn't witness any of this, but my husband came out to the car. He was extremely upset. There was a difference in opinion about how to calm the toddler down, and my mom did not want to do it my husband's way, which he felt was disrespectful to his authority as the parent. She just wanted to leave, so she just wanted us to leave so she could work on calming him down and getting him to sleep. My husband wanted to turn on a cartoon to calm him down. We were all tired and stressed, so I don't believe my mom had any intention of offending him. I think on the flip side, she may have been offended that it seemed like he didn't trust her. All right, let me stop there. It's kind of sad on both persons' part that this became a piece of conflict. One could say, so what? All right, so you want us to leave so you can calm him down and I want him to watch a cartoon. All right, well, we're leaving. I guess I'll defer. Or grandma could have said, well, it's your kid, so if you want him to watch a cartoon, you can watch a cartoon. Why was it? See, I got to ask the question, why was it that neither one of them budged? Or it seems like neither one of them budged. I don't know. But if I were a betting man, which I am when I play nickel dime poker with my friends, I got a feeling that there's probably been some disagreements in the past about stuff. And maybe dad thinks that grandma gives her opinion when she wasn't asked for it. I don't know. And maybe our writer is feeling protective of her mom, understandably so. My mom has never brought it up. I've never addressed it with her. I'm not so keen on doing it anyway. Oh, here it is. See, this is what I mean when I say, later in the email, I come across a speculation that I made up above in the email. I'm not keen on bringing this up because I understand her. All right. There's an allowance, a tolerance for her mom. And I know she can sometimes make insensitive comments. There it is. So this has probably been off and on in the relationship with the husband, as he perceives it. But it doesn't bother the daughter because she says, and I tend to be sensitive and non-confrontational. However, my husband now takes every slight thing as a personal affront to him. Okay. I don't know why he's so sensitive to all that. One could say, yeah, but they do it all the time. My thought was, when he was that upset over the fact that she said, you can just go, I'll calm him down. He got that upset that he interpreted that as she's once again critiquing my parenting. This is what I want to do with my child. And she wants to do it her way. So like her. That'd be my guess. Okay. Let's see what's happening. My dad sent my husband a happy birthday message recently, and my mom did not. She probably doesn't care for your husband all that much. She sent him a card. Okay. She signed it from both my parents with some cash. Well, maybe she does like him. I don't know. When he sent her a thank you message, she didn't reply right away. Now, she sometimes does not respond even to my messages. I'm her daughter. My husband has mentioned that he feels like my parents are more open with my sister-in-law than with him. Other factors make that more likely. Brother and sister-in-law live down the street from my parents. My mom babysits their toddler. There are some things at play. My husband grew up in Mexico. He knows English, but is more comfortable with Spanish, which my family does not speak. All righty. So here's, we got the dynamic. The dynamic is, he's very sensitive. Wife thinks he's overreactive to comments and things that grandma does that may or may not be intentional. All right. So how do you make somebody be less sensitive? How do you make somebody be a little more easygoing? I feel I need to support my husband, but at the same time, I don't think he handles the situation perfectly either. Do I just ignore these comments when my husband makes them? If I defend my mom, I worry my husband will feel invalidated. I would be careful how you defend your mom. I would say, why does it bother you so much that she did that or said that? Why does that bother you so much? What is it about that that you can't just let roll off you? And of course you're going to hear, because she disrespects me. Because she doesn't acknowledge that I have the right to do this. Or she thinks she's never wrong. Then I'd probably ask him, do you want the relationship to continue this way? That'll always have this tension to it, or would you rather just learn to roll with her? See, if you defend your mom, saying she's not like that, or she didn't mean that, or I'm sure she does that with me too, then you're saying to him, you're wrong in getting upset. You're wrong in reacting the way you do. And I'm not he may be, but I'm not sure he's going to take real kindly to hearing that. I have not had the chance to defend my husband since I did not witness the incident. My mom has never brought it up. I don't have this experience on the other side, as my in-laws still live in Mexico, and so we very rarely see them. Apparently, you got two situations at work. Husband is sensitive. Mother is not necessarily very careful about how she says things or does things. Maybe you could talk to your mother. You can say he's sensitive, so if you watch your opinions or if you watch your comments. And of course, I don't know how your mom's going to react. She may say, "Well, so it's all my fault, huh?" I suppose you can try to smooth it, but when you have two people who are standing their own ground and not wanting to say, okay, I can change this, even though I think I don't need to change it because I'm not doing anything wrong, I can change this. I think your husband feels very right, very accurate in his perception of things. Maybe you could ask him, do you think that's what she meant? Do you think she was trying to put down your parenting? Or do you think she was just trying to help? What do you think? Now, if he wants to interpret that as you defending her, what can you say? You're doing it as delicately as you can. And if he does interpret that as you defending her, then you're right. He's going to see a lot of what your mom says as provocative or insensitive. All right. That is that. I'm Dr. Ray. Program here. Doctor is in. See you on the other side.
wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Now, when Jesus was on earth, he taught us a great lesson. He taught us that he came for the sinner, not the virtuous. He came for you because you are imperfect, because sin comes easy to you, and sometimes you don't have the willpower to say no. But you see, if you understood the awesomeness of God and all his power and all his wonder, and he comes down to our level. He wanted to feel. How do you feel? I don't know anybody that loves anyone that much. And this imperfect being that's you and me and all of us, he did it for us. That's why you should never despair, because you're imperfect.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
How important was unity to Jesus Christ? Very, according to the Catholic Catechism. He bestowed unity on his church at the outset. It is something the church can never lose, but with prayer and work, she can improve. This is why, the Catholic Catechism says, Jesus himself prayed at the hour of his passion and continues praying, that they may all be one. As you, Father, are in me, and I in you, may they also be one in us. The Catechism further states, the desire to recover the unity of all Christians is a gift of Christ and a call of the Holy Spirit. The Catechism says there are certain things required in order to respond adequately to this call. A permanent renewal of the church, conversion of the heart, prayer in common, fraternal knowledge of each other, ecumenical formation, dialogue among theologians and Christians, collaboration in good works. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
I sound inept just to help you out. I sacrifice myself psychologically for your well-being. If a putt passes over the hole in golf without dropping, it is deemed to have dropped. That's the rule. The law of gravity holds that any object attempting to maintain a position in the atmosphere without something to support it must drop. So apparently the law of gravity supersedes the law of golf. I'm Dr. Ray. I thank you so much for joining me here, this E-Person Monday. I'm really struggling with our adult 25-year-old engaged son who is living at home awaiting his upcoming nuptials in July. He's a college grad, worked for a year in another state, and came back home to save money, prepare for the wedding, and apply for grad school, which he has been accepted to in philosophy. She says, he has always been, and then she puts, which I think is her way of saying, okay, Dr. Ray, I know you're really reluctant to use that word. It's one of the most overused adjectives in the recent child-rearing lexicon. So she put, strong-willed, smart, and very vocal, which is a nice way of saying he's opinionated and sometimes disrespectful. But since he has graduated and then moved home, he is extremely disrespectful. Ooh. Especially to me, his mother. Let me point out a dynamic here. Much of the time, and if you look at the research, surveys, the studies, women are more verbal than men. That's a truism of the differences between the sexes. As groups now, obviously, there are some men that are way more verbal than women. Okay, but as a group, you take 1,000 women and 1,000 men, by and large, the women are going to average more words per day than the men. All right. She says he's disrespectful to me, his mother. Now, it may be dad doesn't say as much to him. Dad just kind of rolls with him. Dad just kind of ignores him. Dad just kind of keeps his opinion to himself. Where mother, she says, he tells me to shut up Or, and I'm not going to say what else he tells her, but it ain't pretty. It is not good. Let me put you this way. If my 25-year-old kid said that to his mother, he'd be looking for another place to live. He tells me these things. When I remind him, see, that's what I mean. There's my suspicion that she's more likely to say something than dad. When I remind him of his duties while living here, free of charge, except for paying for his insurance and phone. Ooh, what a gig. Nice. He does have a decent job while home. But he is mainly concerned and obsessed about saving for grad school and marriage, understandably. Now, this is interesting because they're giving him a chance to get some financial feet under himself. That's nice. That's very nice. We did that with one of our kids. But the condition is respectful and cooperative. That's the condition. If we're going to let you live here basically for free when you're a significantly into adulthood person, boy, that was wordy, wasn't it? Then you got to be cooperative and pleasant. And the kind of language you use with your mother doesn't make it. The duties we expect of him are dish days. Okay, so he apparently does the dishes on certain days. Doing his own cleaning, laundry, mowing, shoveling, and normal getting along in the house. Respect for other people's property, time, and space. I have had it. And I'm considering reaching out to someone. Little vague someone there. Can you say fiance? Who needs to know that, in my opinion, he's not ready for marriage. She did briefly put the engagement on hold after she spent time at our home in a separate part of the house in our grown daughter's room over her college break at Christmas over the way he treated me. Yeah, that's a good indicator, by the way. Any of you ladies or any of you gentlemen who are thinking of marrying someone but you see how they treat their family members, don't say you didn't notice it. She sees it might just be the way he will act with her after the wedding. He was distraught. Okay. She put the engagement on hold. He didn't like it. And she insisted on counseling for him to talk to our parish priest. He shaped up, as far as she knows, but I have no idea if he really went to any counseling or talked to the priest because he's not treating me any better. If we ask him, it likely means another outburst. We did homeschool, and he holds resentment over some of his friends when he was younger, who he socialized with, who bullied him. Not sure what his victimhood is and what it isn't, but I try to listen to his take. My husband, okay, hold on. His father doesn't fare much better at communicating with him, but when he decides things need addressing, only then. My husband has quite a temper. Okay, this sort of answers my question on the dad's role in all this. Mainly my husband tells me, as does my spiritual director, that the marriage sacrament will give our son the needed grace like it did us. Still, I am so concerned and despair sometimes of how rash, angry, and selfish our son is, that he will really ruin his life and the life of his fiance. She says this. They went to a very good Catholic college, and they pray the rosary together over the phone when they are apart. She insists on it. Interesting. He does go to confession, but would admit to having a weak, mechanical faith, but wants to please people in his life. Ooh, doggy. Well, like many things here, Mom, you see things more clearly than he does, or maybe even his fiance does. The question for you is, do you say anything? Probably not. First of all, he's not going to listen to you. If you say something to her, Because she already has seen this. You know, you're not telling her anything she doesn't know. She's probably choosing to minimize it. If she comes to you, then you can be honest with her. But if you would attempt to say, let me tell you about the guy you're thinking of marrying, he gets wind of it. Oh, you think he's hostile toward you now. See, I think you have a bigger decision. And I want to get to that in a second. Right after this. Because the question is, how long are you going to let him live there mistreating you?
Why do we need Catholic radio? Because not everybody is sitting in front of a computer or watching their television set at home. How about when driving to work? Catholic radio's there for you. I may be a Catholic priest, but I'm still a student of the faith. And Catholic radio helps supply good material, whether it be a question and answer format show, whether it be a show itself on doctrine or theology. I myself, as a priest, am always learning.
Father Wade thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Let us strive to know the Lord. Quick question to you and me right now. Is that what you and I are doing every single day? When you and I wake up every day, do we strive to know Jesus or not? In the Old Testament, in the same book of Hosea, a little bit later on, it's in chapter 14, the Lord says through the prophet, "My people perish." Or in another translation, "My people are being destroyed." Because of a lack of knowledge. Not a lack of data. We got tons of data. Not a lack of information. We got a lot of information. Not just about things that are happening in the world. We got a lot of data, a lot of knowledge, a lot of information about God. But not a lot of intimacy with God. Not a lot of relationship with God. Not a lot of friendship. That's the cry of God's heart. God wants to give himself to us in the incredible gift of friendship. And we're not taking advantage of it.
Step away from the turmoil of the day. In A Holy Hour with Mother Angelica, you'll find lessons that touch every aspect of our relationship with God and our neighbor. These meditations and prayers will help you turn to Jesus in your everyday life. A Holy Hour with Mother Angelica from EWTN Publishing, now available at EWTNRC.com or call 1-800-854-6316.
Catholic Radio's Man for All Reasons. Thinking closely to the speed of thought. You know, they have measured how fast the neurons connect and travel, how fast the electrical chemical impulses move down the axon. It's pretty fast. I mean, we're not talking 70 miles an hour or something like that, but it's pretty quick. Well, some of us, maybe it's not as quick as others. Dr. Ray Grandy, the doctor, is in as the program, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Co-production, Ave Maria Radio Communications and the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network, which is now up to some 400-plus stations, as well as Sirius Satellite Channel 130. And all of the many networks that are involved with the EWTN Global Programming. And they're very, very nicely done networks, too. They certainly are expanded quite a bit. Still continue to expand. I just want to close up this question. To summarize it, 25-year-old son at home, college grad, going to get married in July, mistreats his mother horribly. Let me double underline horribly. If what she says is true, I know how I would react if a 25-year-old kid did that to his mother. Oh, anyway, she's not cooperative. She says she's walking on eggs. Fiance's seen it, is nervous about it, wondering is he going to treat her that way after the marriage. So they've tried to smooth it over. Mom is saying, do I talk to her? Well, she's already seen it. All right, so if you talk to her, you're basically saying, it's
watch out for my son. You could, I suppose. He gets wind of it. You think he's hostile now. So mom says this. I plan on talking to him, sitting down at a mutually agreed upon time. I think my husband will want to be there. Our son is heading to the town where the college is. That's where the fiance is, to spend Easter with her. There is so much here, so much I could tell you. But in short, what are my responsibilities? And here is the crux of the question. How do I make it from here to there, meaning the present to July when he's supposed to get married, without having to cower in my home? You know, Mom, I've got to ask you, why are you cowering in your home? My guess is that you figure if at this point, with only a few months to go, you make a case like this, he'll just be upset, angry. Where's he going to go? He's not going to find an apartment for a month and a half. So you're stuck. What you could do is the last month or two, you could charge him rent. Good rent, hefty rent, $500 a month. Because, well, I don't know if you'll even get it, but you can do it. Because he's just mistreats you so badly. I personally would have significant problems being mistreated by a 25-year-old in my home. Significant. You've raised him. And you said he's been, quote, strong-willed, smart, and very vocal. But then you said, no, he's really gotten disrespectful, including cussing you out. I suspect that they're going to get married. And I suspect that you'll sort of watch this unfold. And as your husband says, and as your spiritual director says, the graces of being married may tone him down. But you know, we got to cooperate with graces. We truly do. They're not going to work against our will. And if this guy doesn't see anything wrong with treating his mother that way, if somehow in his mind he's justified because you're trying to get him to cooperate in the duties around the house that he's living rent-free at age 25, and he sees you as intrusive and pushing him in his life, that doesn't bespeak of a whole lot of insight. And you said something here that made me nervous. They pray the rosary together over the phone when they are apart and also when they are together. She insists on it. He does go to confession, mass, etc., but would admit to having a weak mechanical faith. But he wants to please people in life, so he goes. But resentment wins the day. If he has not embraced this on his own, and he's doing it because that's what she wants, I don't know what their marriage will hold. I can tell you I've seen some marriages where, in fact, the husband did go along with the Catholic lifestyle, so to speak. But as the marriage progressed, he became more resentful, less willing to actually personally embrace it. I've seen that. So hopefully. Well, I'm up against a break again. Oh, wow, that happened quick. All right, let me do that so then I can come back and handle this particular e-person. I won't run out of time. I'm Dr. Ray, and I thank you for joining me.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization.
More information available at solidarityhealthshare.org or at 844-313-4999.
The Catholic Church teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. Feeding 5,000 from a boy's 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, as recorded in John chapter 6, is quite a miracle. Yet the next day, Jesus downplays it in verse 27. Do not work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures for eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. Likewise, God's provision of manna to the Israelites in the desert was also a great miracle, yet Jesus similarly downplays it in verse 49. Your ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, but they died. This is the bread that comes down from heaven, so that one may eat of it and not die. Jesus is clearly stating that his Eucharist is greater than both of these amazing miracles, and the Catholic Church absolutely takes him at his word. Examining the truths of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Do you ever wonder if someone who can't read gets the full effect of alphabet soup? If they would say, I can't taste this. Really can't taste this. It makes no sense to me. Last question on this e-person Monday. It says here, in the past 12 years since the revelation of Maciel and the Legion, there have been so many revelations of clergy scandals in almost every level, parish, diocese, religious orders, and now for the second time at a very Catholic university. My faith is strong, so I don't plan on leaving the church. But the "we're all weak" excuse I get sometimes seems cliche. How can one reconcile a church that is holy, made up of so many big sinners? And she, in humility, says, and knowing that I have so many sins, too. Couple of things. When one says, so many, and that's a key phrase, so many big sinners. In fact, clergy scandals, as ugly as they were a very small percentage of priests. And the majority of those took place many years ago, many decades ago. I don't make excuses for it. I'm simply saying that it is easy to get despairing when the media and every place else pounds away at, and who's going to celebrate the 90%+ of great priests? Who's going to celebrate that, huh? That's not news. If you want to look at the truth of something, you don't look at those who abuse it. You don't say, how can that be true? How can that be legit? Now, I dare say, how could that be holy? If the people who are supposed to represent it, sometimes at the very highest levels, don't follow it. That's not how you judge it. You judge its value by those who do follow it. You don't judge the Catholic faith, for example, if you're going to judge it, by someone who is deceptive, unholy, self-centered, and radically immoral. You judge it by Mother Teresa. But that's what it looks like when you follow it to its extreme. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's a whole lot of sinners in it. Here's the question. Did Jesus have a perfect sense of human nature? Of course, right? He didn't need a human resource group to tell him, I think you ought to pick this one, not that one. Here's a good one. Let's interview Peter. Let's find out if he can make the grade. Oh, Jesus picked 12 guys. Now, one of them sold him out, literally. One of them, the fellow that he put in charge of things, swore an oath to a slave girl. They didn't even know the man. So it's apostasy, really. And then nine of them scattered, ran, hid. Well, would that make what Jesus preached, what he stood for, what he came here to do, questionable? Would it? And here's the God-man. He picked these guys, hand-picked them. And yet their humanness took over at a moment of crisis. Yeah, there are a lot of. No, I'm not even going to say that. That doggone it, I'm starting to repeat the cliche. There are those who do great wrong while proclaiming to be ones of great right. The phrase is this. The greatest evil can only be done in the name of the greatest good. Therefore, if one proclaims to have God-revealed truth guiding him, and then he turns around and commits egregious acts of self-centeredness, of self-seeking, of self-passion, he's extremely, extremely wrong. But that doesn't do one single thing to make the faith less valid. It doesn't. The faith is valid on its own. It was established by Jesus. So therefore, whether some people don't follow it while they proclaim that they do, has absolutely nothing, not a whit of commentary on that faith.
Oh no, if that faith was legitimate, there'd be more holy people.
How do you know there's not more holy people? The media doesn't publicize the holy people. If anyone knows anything about the history of the Western world, they will see that it was the Catholic Church, as Al Cresta says, who gave the Western world a great, great debt. Well, actually, the Western world owes a great debt to the Church through hospitals and orphanages and all kinds of services to the poor. That would not have been done if not moved by God's church and its teaching. So it's too easy to get caught up in these highly, highly publicized human failures and then extrapolate from that and say the whole thing is rotten to the core. Who knows what anybody's doing at any time? You can't trust anybody. I will say this. I personally believe it is harder to be faithful now because the culture is seductively evil. It's not just evil. That if it were evil, you could see it. It'd be easy to resist. It's seductively evil. In other words, it looks good. And therefore, there will be a certain percentage of people, even in supposedly holy roles, who will be pulled off. That will happen. But you judge the church and her truthfulness by what happens if she is followed, not by what happens if she is not followed. That makes no sense. If my neighbor has adulterous relationships on his wife, that's not a reflection on marriage. That's a reflection on him. I can't say, marriage is a waste. Look at what he did to it. That makes no logical sense whatsoever. Thanks for joining me. Glad I got a chance to be with you. Good luck, Mitten. See you tomorrow. We can talk face-to-face, ear-to-ear. I thank you, Andrew Krucek, for doing what you do over there at Ave. Appreciate the company so very, very much. Walk with God. He'll never let you down. He's going to be holy all the time.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.